Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Delta Faucet, who wants to transform your day-to-day life through water. Which may sound like a lot to expect from your faucet, so I sort of asked one of their designers, what's the big deal? You can hear his answer later in the episode, and check out all of Delta's designs at deltafaucet.com/YHL. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're talking about what to do if you have a family hand-me-down that looks weird with the rest of your decor, plus why many online design quizzes are set up to fail, and I have a harebrained house flipping idea.
Hey everybody.
Hello.
Sherry, I think you're kicking off what's new this week, right?
Yes. So what's new with me is I got this crazy harebrained idea to go look at a foreclosure in our neighborhood because my friend's a realtor and she called me and was like, hey, this house up on this cute, charming street right near our house is for sale and it just hit the listing and the price is insanely cheap, cheaper than any house I've ever seen for sale in our neighborhood. And I was like, I'm outside, come pick me up. Like I dropped the phone and I ran screaming to John, I'm going to look at that house. And John's like, we can't buy a house right now. And I'm like, okay, whatever you say, bye.
Yeah, if you know one thing about Sherry, she loves a deal and a deal will often take you into this tailspin.
Because it was just such an insane deal. And I thought, it's a beautiful street and a beautiful lot. I knew where it was on a cul-de-sac. And I thought, there are thousands of people swarming this house right now. I have to be one of them. Like, even if I don't get this house, I need to see this house. And my friend, the realtor, felt the same way. She's like, I'm driving right now. I'm picking you up.
You guys were also having like house FOMO. Like, you didn't want to miss the chance to like take this and make it your own.
Exactly. Well, my brain immediately starts worrying with like, ooh, maybe this would be a good flip house. It's such a cheap price.
Not just for us. Whenever you see a deal, you're like always telling our friends like, hey, you should buy this. Like, come flip. Like, even if they live across the country.
That's right. I'm always texting my friends. Katie, my friend Julia, they're like house lovers. So I'm sending them pictures, even though that does not logistically make any sense.
No. We were having a hard enough time with the house 2 hours away.
Like exactly.
10 states away. I can't even imagine.
Exactly. And side note, we are in the process of making over the beach house. And I think that's why the idea was planted in my head. Like I would never have the cojones to take on this sort of a project before. But now that I know about things like termites and mold and all the things we're dealing with, foundation issues on the beach house, I feel a little bit more equipped.
Like nothing scares you now.
Exactly. It's very dangerous, actually.
It is very dangerous.
But then I got out there and it scared me.
And I was relieved to hear
John breathed a sigh of relief when I came home and I was like, nope, don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. And here's why, guys. If you're looking at a house for an inexpensive flip, first of all, the price needs to be the place you start. So that this house had that going for it.
Green light.
Green light. Perfect low price in a neighborhood that had high value. So I knew whoever bought this house, even just the lot and the location, had a beautiful woods behind it and the end of a cul-de-sac. It was the money location. So it check mark in that area. But some other things that I knew would be super costly were a turnoff to me. It had a pool in the back that would need to be fully rebuilt, which is more expensive than just getting a house with a backyard that you can throw grass seed on. You'd have to fill in the pool or you'd have to fully replace the pool, which requires a big investment.
Yeah, I mean, a pool is a double-edged sword real estate-wise.
Anyway.
Yeah, and if it's in bad condition. Yeah.
Exactly. And this also did not have a garage. They had taken a two-car garage and converted it into like a living area, but not a bedroom. So it was added square footage.
So like a pool house?
No, it had a separate little tiny pool house that was kind of like a shed. This was just like a sunken area. We couldn't really figure out what it was because it didn't make sense. It was like 5 steps down. It looked like part of it was made into a laundry room. There were hookups. I should explain that this entire house was gutted, guys. So a lot of it was just framing. No walls, no drywall, no anything that even differentiated what was what. A lot of the bathrooms didn't even have plumbing. You just had to guess like, oh, this looks like it's not a closet. So it's probably going to be the bathroom.
Yeah, when you showed me some of the pictures, it looked like someone maybe had started renovating it, like maybe an investor bought it and was like trying to flip it and then they got in over their heads or something. I don't know what the situation was.
Yeah, word on the street is someone just started this project a long time ago and it was vacant for a long time. You could tell there were like birds flying around in it. It wasn't fully airtight. Some of the windows were broken. So this was truly, I mean, it looked like it needed all the love in the world. And sometimes that's great. Like our beach house is an example of a house I think is pretty straightforward. I mean, it does have things like...
Knock on wood.
Yeah. It does have things like foundation issues, which are expensive. But things like the layout of the beach house mostly makes sense to us. Right. We're tweaking it a little bit. This house For example, of a layout flaw, it didn't have stairs. So there wasn't upstairs, but the way you got there was going on a ladder that had been leaned up and you're on the tippy top and you're kind of
jumping. You are such a diva. You need stairs to get upstairs.
I'm a diva. No, I felt like Mission Impossible. I was like, dun, 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 dun. I'm all like, hey, Shannon, hold my phone. And it just left me with more questions than answers.
Yeah, because you guys couldn't even figure out where the stairs would go, right?
That's another strike against it. So, like, didn't have a garage, had a pool you'd have to deal with. Not only were there not stairs, but the layout did not make sense for where the stairs would go. It was almost as if this investor started building the house and then realized, like, oh, crap, I forgot about where the stairs go.
Yeah.
So, like, where the ladder was leaned up was a big open area between the kitchen and the living room. And I can't imagine anyone who had created that open, lofted floor plan would want stairs to block it. So that was immediately eliminated as like, surely they didn't expect the stairs to go where this ladder is. But the place that made sense for the stairs to go was turned into a first floor master. So it would have taken a big chunk out of the master. So I think the layout would have to be rethought. But it was a beautiful lot. It had all the charm in the world.
I bet someone will be in the position to take it and make it what it needs to be. So
yeah, I'm waiting for it to be like in a year, an open house for a beautiful, fancy house that's for sale for like five times what they paid for. Because realistically, they could ask three or four times more what the cost of the foreclosure was if they fixed it up and made it nice in that part of the neighborhood. So I was happy to leave with closure.
I was happy you left with closure.
No part of me wanted a part of that.
Awesome. Music to my ears. More of that. Go see all the houses you want that come home with that conclusion, please.
Because, you know, I just like to save them. Sometimes you see something with a glimmer of excitement. And this did have cool things. It had a brick floor in the breakfast room, like old reclaimed brick. It had a lofted living room with beams. It was sort of like a ski lodge, which I loved. And it was tucked away in the trees. It just had like the perfect cozy vibe that I wanted to foster.
It was charming on paper.
Exactly. And parts of it were charming in person. It just, there were other things I just couldn't get over.
Right. It was also haunted.
No, there were lots of birds in there, though. I was kind of like, where are they coming from?
It's an aviary.
But what's new with you?
So lately, I've been thinking a lot about design quizzes. You know, all those like find your style, BuzzFeed type things, which we love, right?
Yeah, they're fun. It's funny that you've been thinking a lot about them lately.
Well, you know, recently, Emily Henderson shared an online version of the quiz that she put in her book.
Right.
And she was asking people to kind of beta test it and stuff. And she was very funny and very honest when she wrote again saying, thanks, guys. Like, apparently we need to do more work. Like, I guess people were saying it was not diagnosing them as correctly as they had hoped.
I think that's like every design quiz.
Well, exactly. Right? That was kind of my reaction when I read that in her post is like, I don't feel like any online design quiz has ever like pinpointed me to the point where I'm like, well, great. Now I have all the answers.
Right. Well, I think the slippery slope is even like, if you ask us, two people who do house stuff all the time and love design, what our style is, I don't feel like we say the same thing twice.
No.
I don't think we're that pigeonholy of ourselves, right? Well, like, sometimes I say we like light and airy. Sometimes I'll say, oh, we like modern, but now we're leaning with a little bit of traditional and like a Turkish or Persian rug.
Right. I think that's the inherent flaw in the concept of, well, probably any online quiz.
Right. Like, what type of bread are you?
Right, exactly. Well, no, that was spot on. I am totally awry.
Oh, you are awry. I feel like I'm a pumpernickel.
Because I think generally as people, we are kind of averse to having ourselves defined by others.
Right. Like, you know? Don't tell me what I am.
Well, and so that's what I was thinking about when I was reading Emily's post was like, I think if we expect any design quiz, no matter how well it's designed, to get us exactly diagnosed and give us all the answers to move forward, we have too high expectations for these things.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they can be educational and they can point things out to us.
Right. But I do think the value is beyond just entertainment and having fun and whatever, laughing at the result, is the process of taking the questions. Because I think...
Oh, you're doing it. It's about the journey, not the destination thing.
Exactly, exactly. Because I think just taking a moment to have to think through some of the things and pick a preference, like, well, do I like this picture more or this picture more? And when you are stuck and you can't tell, you're like, well, they kind of look the same. You have to take that time to think, well, this one maybe does look a little bit more rustic and this one maybe looks a little bit more farmhouse. Like, you start to have to sort through your own thoughts.
You analyze the analysis.
Yes, exactly. You basically psychoanalyze yourself.
And decide, maybe I like a little rustic over a little cottage.
Right. I mean, I guess I'm talking about quizzes where they actually have design questions and they're not like, what cocktail do you like most? And somehow translate to the fact that like you love contemporary.
Right, right, right. Yeah. I definitely think the ones that show you a photo of a room can be helpful just in that accidentally while taking it, you can see something interesting in a room and implement that in your own home. And that's the like very clear an obvious way that these quizzes can be educational. And then I think sometimes the description can help you, just defining a term. I remember once we were at the tile shop buying tile and a guy came up to us and said, "This is a weird question, but do you know the term transitional?" And I said, "Oh yeah, I know the term transitional. It basically is the place between modern and traditional. It's this like sort of newish coined term that designers say if a space isn't fully traditional and it's not fully modern, it's called transitional." And so I explained that to him and he seemed to have a light bulb moment and say like, "Okay, so it's not like the mosaic tile, which is modern, and it's not the like rustic travertine flooring. It's sort of somewhere in the middle." So I think sometimes someone defining a term for you can help because then you just have this term that's a point of reference. But I would hardly think that any word can fully describe your style, right? Like, does that give you enough information to outfit your whole house if you know you're transitional?
Right. Because like you were saying a moment ago, I don't think any of us want to think about our style as like one thing for the most part.
Right. When people ask me that, I'm always like, what did I say last time? I don't even remember.
Exactly. What was that quiz I took? Was I peachy?
Yeah. Like you were saying, I think the exercise of doing it is helpful and it can never hurt. And if it's only for entertainment, that's kind of fun. And maybe we should put links to old quizzes in the show notes that we've shared on the blog, because we've shared a ton of design quizzes over the years on the blog.
Yeah, I'll definitely put some links in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast to Emily's post, the one I referenced, as well as some of the old design quizzes that we have shared over the years. Who knows if they're still working links.
If you're wondering if you're rye or pumpernickel, you won't find that there.
But you know what quiz I won't link there?
What?
The one you're about to get.
Yes, you will. It will be in the show notes.
I will. Well, Sherry, stop screwing up my transitions. Can we just play the music? So you know I love a geography-based quiz.
Oh, gosh. And you know I'm bad at geography, so this is a perfect mix.
I think you might be okay at this. I saw on Facebook there's this company called Homesick Candles.
And I like where this is going. Yeah. If you're homesick, you buy the candle for your home state, and it smells like it.
Yes, exactly. Apparently, they infused all these candles with scents that are reminiscent of each state and even some cities.
Aww.
So I was going to read you the scents. And you have to guess which state they're from.
This concept of this is cute because you do a lot of times when you're homesick, it's like a certain song. There's like a nostalgia to a scent or an audio clue, like a song you hear or a smell that reminds you of something.
Well, don't they say smell has really powerful ties to memory?
Yeah, I think so.
Just to give you some examples, the New Jersey candle, where you're from, it says it has scents reminiscent of the Jersey Shore.
Oh, that's obvious.
that's not in the quiz because that kind of is a giveaway. The Virginia one said it has scents of honeysuckle and forest floor.
Oh, that's nice. I don't know if I'd smell it and be like, this smells like Virginia.
Right. I can't picture the combination of honeysuckle and forest floor.
No, I mean, what does the forest floor smell like?
Dirt?
I need to just like lay on the ground. Yeah.
Go lay on the ground. Cheryl will be back in a few minutes.
Doop, 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 doop,
doop. Foley artist effect.
Yeah.
Door closed.
Do you guys know what a Foley artist is? It's the person who makes the sound effects for things. And I think it'd be the most fun job ever.
Okay, back on track. Time for the quiz.
Okay.
Your first candle has hints of rainforest, coral, pineapple, and sea salt.
Oh, come on. Oh, but can this be Hawaii or Florida or California?
It's just one of them.
Wait, pineapple, though, is Hawaii.
Yes.
Yes!
See, it's not so bad. This one has hints of spruce forest, mountain air, and glacial meltwater.
Okay, this is either Alaska, Maine. Well, maybe Alaska.
Yes.
You're just giving me, like, the two out there.
Well, I tried to pick the ones that were distinct.
Okay. Thank you, honey. I love you.
They get harder.
Okay.
Hints of cactus, orange, and of course, the ocean.
I would have said Nevada for cactus, but the ocean has me thinking it's California.
It is Southern California specifically.
Oh, crap, because as you were saying that, I was like, it's Mexico.
That's really Southern California. They split up Southern California from the Northern California one, which has subtle hints of pear, redwoods, and vineyards.
Ooh, that's the candle I want to smell. See, the problem with me is I wouldn't want my state. I'd want, like,
the one that
smells good, like pear and vineyards. Mmm.
Would you want the one from Indiana that smells like kettle corn, hay, and denim?
I don't know.
Okay, moving on. This has a hint of leather, a bit of fresh cotton, and a touch of sage.
Leather, fresh cotton, and sage. Texas.
Yes.
The leather. I got it from the leather.
A hint of orange, a touch of sea mist, and a bit of driftwood.
Oh my gosh. Orange has got to be the clue. Florida.
Yes.
Yes. The orange gave it away.
I think you're good on all these so far. Hints of cherries, coffee, and rain.
Cherries, coffee, and rain. Seattle.
That's the city.
Oh, crap. Washington!
I like this one. Hints of chocolate and molasses.
Chocolate and molasses. What could this be? It's something like Pennsylvania. Don't quote me. I'm not finished yet. Molasses. Massachusetts. Hershey's.
No, Pennsylvania.
Oh, come on. I said Hershey's. Dang.
I like you're like, it's not something like Pennsylvania. It's probably Massachusetts.
I did say Pennsylvania first. Right. Go with your first instinct.
I gave you a look. You just didn't pick up on it.
I missed it.
Okay. A hint of sweet tea and a touch of peach.
That is going to be Georgia.
Yep. Hints of bourbon, mint, and sunshine.
Ooh, that sounds delicious. Mint and sunshine and bourbon. He's got money. He's got magazines. Charleston. It's Charleston.
That's also a city.
I know, but you said some of them are cities.
Right, no, but this is not South Carolina.
South Carolina. It's not South Carolina.
Where might they drink something that has lots of mint in it while they're out in the sunshine in their big hats?
Kentucky Derby.
Yes, Kentucky.
Yes. I like the hats. The hats tipped me off, John.
It doesn't smell of hats.
Thank you.
It smells of horse track and no.
I don't know.
I'll put a link to homesick candles in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast so you guys can look at all the states and see what your state smells like. Okay, but next, Sherry's very excited because we have...
the biggest celebrity we've ever had on the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us on Young House Love as a podcast, we have Seth Rogen.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just kidding. That was our server at a restaurant who sounded so much like Seth Rogen.
I only allowed Sherry to play it on the podcast under the condition that I could explain the backstory.
John was like, we are not going to do this. We are not recording this guy.
This was the most embarrassing moment of my life.
He was so into it. He loved that he sounded like Seth Rogen. Across the room, you heard him be like, can I get a new one menus? I was like, Seth Rogen's here. Seth Rogen's here and he's handing out menus.
And she was immediately like, I'm going to get him to record something for the podcast. And I was
like,
no, you are
not. And so
like,
as we ate our appetizers, John was like, nope, shutting it down.
I was like, we are not going to turn on those people.
As we ate the entree and he seemed very proud when I said, you know, you sound like Seth Rogen. I was laying the groundwork, yeah, as I said to John. And he was like, nope, still not going
to
do it.
Sherry's entire dinner turned into a strategy as to how to build him up to say yes.
And then at the end, I just was like, can I record your voice because you sound so much like Seth Rogen? And he was like, for what? And I was like, well, we have this podcast. We have this joke where like celebrities come on, but it's not really them. It's usually me doing bad impersonations. And he was like, what's it called? And I said, Young House Love. And then he
said, as you can imagine, this is winning him over like crazy. He's like, well, sure, podcast. Why not?
Well, I said, it's Young House Love. And he goes, Young House Blood?
I forgot. Young House Blood, yes.
And I said, no, that would be a different podcast. But he was happy to lend his voice to this prank. I'm sure 0% of you thought it was really Seth Rogen. But if you ever go to
Peter Chang's
and you get waited on by Kyle, shout out to Kyle. Yes. He sounds exactly like him. Best night ever. Yeah. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
Don't worry, everybody. I left him a bigger tip after that because I was so embarrassed. Well, we don't actually have an interview today, but I think we are going to take a listener question.
Hi, John and Sherry. This is Julia from Longmont, Colorado. My husband and I inherited some furniture from his grandmother. They're beautiful, kind of family heirlooms. However, they are not quite our style. They kind of look like the furniture you would expect to get from your grandmother. We have more of a modern, contemporary style ourselves. My question is, how can we maintain some of our modern sensibilities while still incorporating these more traditional pieces? Thanks so much. I'm really loving the podcast. So keep it up. Thanks. Bye.
This is a really good question. And I think actually a lot of people probably bump into this.
Yeah, it's like one of those tough things because you love the people that gave it to you or that it reminds you of, but it might make your house not quite feel like it's yours anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I will say up front, like generally, we subscribe to the idea that rooms often become more interesting when you have a mix of styles and a mix of times represented. You know, you might have a new piece of furniture, but you also will have this old thrift store piece that brings some age and character to the room and makes it not feel like just this new store-bought room.
Right, exactly. I think that was also something we learned over time. As we sort of figured out our style, we realized like, okay, I get why designers say one old piece in every room.
Right.
That is literally a tip that a lot of designers will say there needs to be one old thing just for interest and to keep it from being too similar or like a matching set and everything looks like
it's like a wedding. Something old, something new, something thrifted.
Right. Something green, like our old green hutch in the dining room. I'm going to put a picture of this in the show notes. So go to younghouselove.com/podcast and you can see it. But I think our dining room is actually a great example because it has a really modern clean line table from Crate and Barrel, but it has an old Persian rug and it has an old buffet that we got that's probably the oldest piece in our whole house. It's like has curved legs and it's very antique looking.
It looks old.
Like right. It's, the paint's like it's chipping lived off. A life. It has lived a life. The hardware is kind of like patina. And sort of everything is playing well together, a super modern chandelier, but then we have these corner built-ins that feel more traditional and they go to the ceiling. So it's the layering that makes the room interesting is what I'm trying to say. So if you have these pieces that are older and you love modern and contemporary, it feels like you're halfway there, like you have a little bit of each. What it might mean is actually being more intentional about your pairings. What I mean by that is maybe over an antique buffet that you get handed down, you put a modern picture or some modern candlesticks on top of it or something that actually makes the two items feel connected, like old meets new.
Yeah, I think the danger, and Julia expressed this, like she doesn't want her house to look grandma, I think she said.
Right.
And I think that's the danger is if you take a piece like this and see it as your cue that it should overtake the rest of the space and define the rest of the space, and you start buying all pieces that match that.
Or even think you need to keep like with like. Your instinct might be it's a oldish buffet, I'll put this old doily runner on it, and then I'll put my old antique lamp on it, because that's where all the old things go. Instead, make things the bridge. So bridge the gap between old by putting new right near it or on it. The juxtaposition of old and new can actually be really interesting, and it won't make your space feel dated. It will make it feel layered.
And also, there's always the option to like paint or refinish a piece of furniture if you can do something like that to make it match your style better. Even changing the hardware or like little tweaks to it. I mean, obviously the caveat to that is like you should be sensitive to the history and the story and what the person who handed it down may think about it. But, you know, in general, we would like to believe that most people who hand you down something like that want you to use it, want you to enjoy it. They don't want you to keep it around your house because you hate it and it makes you feel bad. So adapting it to your lifestyle, if that's the way that makes you continue to treasure this piece, in most cases, I think the person would be happy you did that. But of course, if you have any doubts and you can check, that's always a good safety measure.
Right. If there's someone you can ask, the funny thing is when we get handed something, our relatives literally say, what'd you do? Send me the update picture. Like they're expecting us to transform things. And sometimes we don't and they seem sad. Like we're like, no, we like it the way it is. We oiled it so the wood is prettier. But you know, in other cases, we bought an old dresser that we refinished because the tone of the old dresser was reddish and we wanted a more brownish. So that was just as simple as sanding and staining it. So things like that. Don't just take something as it has to stay exactly the way it is and it will never work in my room, because a little tweak like different hardware, maybe it's more modern handle on an older dresser, might be that bridge that makes the whole thing make sense in your room. So don't underestimate how a small tweak might make all the difference in your space and make you really embrace that piece and be so excited that you kept it.
Right. And now Julia's question was interesting because she was asking because she has pieces that she wants to make work. But we also got a call from someone named Monica who was having a slightly different problem with her hand-me-downs.
Hi, John and Sherry. This is Monica from Fort Washington, Wisconsin. I'm working on decluttering my entire house, but I have tons of things that I have received as gifts from family members that are maybe sentimental or family heirlooms that I don't really want and I have no need for, but I feel guilty getting rid of them. I'm just wondering how you deal with things like this when you're working on decluttering. Thank you.
So it sounds like Monica has these heirlooms and hand-me-downs that she just cannot make work. And at least we are in the camp of, as ruthless as it may sound, if you're not happy having it in your house, don't keep it around.
I know it sounds so cutthroat, and there's sort of a half measure. I mean, what you can do is store it in the attic, and when that person's coming over, you can bring it out and show it to them and do that for a few years.
If you want to be a liar.
Well, the funny thing to me is that I think often people don't even remember who they hand things down to.
Right.
I can't tell you how many times a relative to me has asked me how I'm liking something that my brother has or that one of us doesn't have or was never given. And the other thing I think is you might be having these negative feelings about it, but the intention of the gift is never to give you negative feelings.
Yeah, hopefully.
I don't believe that is. So even if you think it would crush someone that you don't like it, I think it would crush that person who loves you more that you're living with something every day that makes you upset and you're giving side eye to it. Like they want you to love your house and they probably would appreciate if you didn't love it, don't donate it or throw it away. But maybe you do something like you find another relative who might need it.
Right. I just often think for these things that are like special to people and mean something to people that it's a better use for them to be treasured by someone than to be shooed away in the closet or the attic collecting dust.
Right, like, that's true. You that's don't want to hide it in justice. Your house and feel bad that you're hiding it and no one else is enjoying it.
Right.
So maybe the solution is to try and find another family member, and maybe there's like a group email that happens that you're like, I got this beautiful dresser from grandma. I can't find a spot for it in my house that makes sense. Who needs a dresser? I want to keep this in our family. I love it so much and I want to find the perfect home for it.
Right. I mean, there may be an uncomfortable conversation or two and it might hurt the person's feelings initially, but I think in the long run, if you demonstrate some dedication to making sure this piece gets the use it deserves, I think that will be more important to the giver in the long run. Like, speaking back to that green piece in our dining room, like, say the person who sold that to us, what if that was a hand-me-down that they couldn't find a space for, so it was just like shoved in a corner, like covered in clothes or something like that. Like,
yeah, it's so
that's
happy
kind of like
here.
A sad
it
like
has such a happy life here. Let right. the furniture have a happy life.
Right, exactly.
And it sounds like when you use the word decluttering, Monica, maybe this is more about little tchotchke things. That would be weird to be like, I need to find a home for it because I can't find a spot for this tiny tabletop object, because I think those are pretty easy to find a spot for. And as we're saying this into the microphone, I'm thinking there are probably people listening who are like, you're cold. You're both cold-hearted.
I am.
But I think, guys. John is. My philosophy is just, you need to love your house. Everyone makes their house for themselves. It'd be crazy if your mother-in-law made her house for you, and it'd be crazy if you made your house for your mother-in-law. So as cold as it sounds that if it doesn't bring you joy, it shouldn't be in your house, that's kind of our philosophy, right? Like, if it doesn't bring your joy, it's probably not great to surround yourself with it. So figure out ways to make it bring you joy, maybe displaying it in a certain way. Maybe you get a display case and put it in there. Even if you have a memory box for something little that you want to look at because it's so nostalgic and you love it, but you just are not putting it on your kitchen counter and staring at it every day. I think there's lots of ways to try and make something work in your house, but if you've worked a really long time to get it to gel and it's just not coming together, it really should not feel like you are being a jerk.
Yeah, you've put in the effort. Like,
right, you really tried.
Yes. You were less cold-hearted than me. And it's actually funny because this is a topic that we touched on in our second book, Love Will Live Will Home. If you flip to page 29, we talk a little bit more about this and some other options for this. And we even have a project on the following page where we used an old piece in a different way.
That's right. We've reimagined an old thing in a new twist.
Wow, you really oversold that one.
I felt like I was turning into the, who's that Kool-Aid man? In a new way.
He's just called the Kool-Aid man.
How do you say Kool-Aid
man? What's his proper name? What's his birth name? And also, if you guys have a question for us that you would like us to tackle on a future episode, you can always leave us a voicemail at 571-4-YHL-HAP. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but then we will come back with some more digging. So as you guys heard, this week's episode is brought to you by Delta Faucet, who I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, especially if you've ever renovated a kitchen or bathroom.
And we got to talk to Delta Faucet senior designer Seth Fritz. And let me tell you, that guy is pretty passionate about faucets.
Yeah, I know.
He was telling us about how their team hunts for inspiration, collaborates with engineers, and about all the seemingly little design choices that go into each one of their products.
But you know, even after hearing Seth talk so excitedly about his work, I still couldn't help but ask him this question. Seth, what would you say to someone who's sort of like, it's a faucet, what's the big deal?
You know, what I would say is, you know, next time you wash your hands, think about all the senses that you're using, you know, touch and feel and sound. And then you start to think, well, what if I could make the water sound differently? What if I could make it feel softer? What if the handle was easier for you to turn on? What if it made cleaning your dishes and your sink a little bit easier? What if I can create a really indulgent shower by adjusting how the water comes out of the shower head and it makes you relax? So that's what I always say. There's ways that I can affect your emotions just with your interactions with water.
If you're still curious to see how Seth and everyone at Delta uses good design to make your life easier, check out all their kitchen and bath products at deltafaucet.com/YHL.
I feel like this transition between the ad music and the We're Digging music is always so awkward, but I just love the We're Digging music.
Me too.
I don't want to let it go.
Can't let it go. Okay, so this week, I am digging something that's up there with ferns and shower curtains.
Because
I have dug some weird stuff. But I feel like this is something that makes a real difference, and it's fun, and it's a cute way to sort of update a room that you use all the time every day.
Guys, she has refused to tell me what this is.
John doesn't know. This is the build-up for John.
Yeah, I'm
the reveal is interesting fruit bowls.
Oh, my gosh.
Hear me out. This is why. We can't all renovate our kitchen every year, right?
No, we cannot.
But I was looking around our house and I was like, dude, I have like 5 or 6 bowls I love, all of which I think were sold as fruit bowls. I just use them in lots of ways. So an example, well, on our living room shelves, which you can see from your baby chair right now,
yeah,
we have an open weave pink bowl that is so pretty on the shelves. And that, I think, was a fruit bowl. It was from Home Goods. You could fill it with pears, apples, plums. Think of all this amazing
all of
produce.
All of the fruits.
But the point to me is, fruit bowls can be used for more than just fruit, like they're decorative in a shelving situation.
Wait, are you just digging bowls now?
No, I'm saying for uses of fruit, but then I looked around the house and I was like, if I wanted to switch up my counter, I have all these different fruit bowls I could bring in and fill with fruit and they'd be beautiful. We have a bowl in the dining room full of postcards. We send ourselves postcards. It's like a sentimental thing we do on vacation to remind ourselves what we do on vacation. So in the bowl is all the postcards, but I could seriously swap out the fruit bowl I have now for that bowl and have the kitchen looking spicy.
So what you're saying is the beauty of these bowls is they are interchangeable.
Exactly. And they do more than just hold fruit. But the fun is, remember, if your kitchen is like static and you wish it had more of a happy thing, a thing you interact with every day is the fruit bowl. And it's on the counter all the time, right? Like, we're not putting the fruit bowl in the fridge or in the pantry. It's out. So if you're somewhere like a thrift store or Home Goods or, you know, a little local shop, it's an inexpensive purchase that can make you happy, much like adding a fern or changing your shower curtain. It's just an easy update for your house, and I think it's overlooked. I think we buy a fruit bowl and we live with it for 300 years, right?
Yeah.
We buy one fruit bowl and we hand it down to generations.
I think there's like a little bit of a subversive element to this we're digging for Sherry, because she is frustrated how much fruit I require to be out.
John requires 2 fruit bowls, so I'm a fruit bowl buying champion.
Well, because we still are making our green smoothies, and so we always have a lot of bananas around.
All the bananas, guys. All the apples. 2 colors of apples. We have the green apples, yep. We have the red apples.
Yep. Well, and I will say that it's been helpful having that out because our kids have just started to grab apples, like,
yeah,
as
they eat
snack
apples
randomly.
Like candy.
So just because you moved one pile of apples into the dining room recently and I didn't know, and then I just bought 10 more apples. So
guys, we had like 30 apples in our house at one time. John's like, how was I to know they were in the dining room? Yeah. I'm like, didn't you see the bowl not on the counter?
Said, you know what? We need more fruit bowls. More interesting fruit bowls.
I just really, the way I come up with we're digging is I walk around the house and I look for things that I like. And I walked around and I was like, I have all these fun bowls. And the concept behind this is that you can't change everything in your kitchen all the time, but you sure as heck can get a new fruit bowl and get excited about it.
Yeah, I'll get on board with you. It's an overlooked kitchen accessory.
Yes. So I'm going to make a mood board of these and scour the internet for my favorite fruit bowls. And I'll put it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast for you guys. I feel like there's going to be some spicy, exciting fruit bowls happening. Get ready. Hold on to your hats.
Well, what I am digging this week is a book, actually a kid's book, I guess you could call it. It's called My Crazy Invention Sketchbook, 50 Awesome Drawing Activities for Young Inventors. And it was a book that our daughter picked up at a book fair. And it's really cool because it basically is kind of like a bunch of prompts, like drawing prompts.
Right, like it'll show you a cool sneaker that has wheels on it and say, now invent a sneaker that helps you fly.
Or there's one with a bunch of like weird hat inventions, like the umbrella hat, and it prompts you to come up with a cool, crazy hat that does something. And the reason why I like it, not only because it has occupied lots of time.
Right, the novelty of getting to write in a book is strong for our daughter. Because, yes. You know, writing in a book is kind of not what you're allowed to do. But this one has all these blank pages and you're invited to draw in it and color in it. And
well, and it feels like slightly older than like your standard kids coloring book. Like this is a special book that she only gets out when her brother is taking a nap so that she can use it. So it has a bit of novelty to it. But the reason I like it, besides the fact that it just has like nerdy invention facts peppered throughout.
Yeah, you want her to be a little inventor.
Well, it's like this nice kind of like cool marrying of like the creative arts that she's naturally drawn to and sort of like the STEM activities, you know, like science, technology, engineering, and math. So I just like that it gives her an opportunity to kind of like apply drawing and all this stuff to like some engineering questions and like figuring out how like she might create an invention or a machine that might do something. So I will put a link to it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. Again, it's My Crazy Invention Sketchbook. And I will say, because I realized I was digging this, I actually went onto Amazon and left a review because we're always asking people to leave podcast reviews.
Oh, you left a review. Look at you practicing what you preach.
Well, I was like a hypocrite here. I'm just like reviewing it on the podcast.
So what'd you say?
I said I liked it. I said, listen to my podcast for the full review.
You did not, did you?
I did not, no.
Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast. We're so grateful that you guys tune in each week, even when we don't actually have any chats with Seth Rogen or Celine Dion.
And you know how we ask you to recommend us to a friend or a family member each week? This week, why not recommend us to someone who's just like a casual acquaintance? You know, like the lady you work with or that college friend who you kind of think of every time you see ramen noodles?
And keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Mrs. On the Move, who listened while standing a bench that she built in her foyer with her own two hands.
And head over to younghouselove.com/podcast for all the bonus links, photos, and info from this episode. Like some fun Find Your Style quizzes.
And a peek at that house with no stairs.
Later.
Bye. No, there were lots of birds in there, though. It was like a building you'd see in Great Expectations, the movie. And Ethan Hawke would walk in, and a bird would flutter, and it would be like beautiful. You're not following
I'm where not I'm going following with this. This.
Just picture something beautiful but broken. Like my heart.
Like my soul.